There it is. It's
loud noises!
Episode 33. So espresso is a thing that people drink sometimes. We've been known to drink it. People in Italy drink it. So what we're going to talk about is a little bit more of the American, not perception, but the myths surrounding espresso in the United States. And they're really things that have come up or questions that arise because of the high level of production of certain places like Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts. What we want to do is explain what's actually happening when you pull espresso, what's actually happening after you pull the espresso, which I think is the most interesting thing. Before we get into espresso, post-pull, go to iTunes, leave us a review. That would be great. Like 18 of you have left us reviews, when I think there's got to be at least 25 that listen to the podcast. I actually have no idea how many people listen to the podcast.
Google Analytics not working these days?
There's only so many hours in the day.
See, if you just post a comment, we'll know you're listening, and we'll sleep better at night.
We'll finally have meaning.
Exactly.
So you should do that. Much of you will write us emails, podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com, and ask us coffee questions, which we're glad for too, because hey, it's what we enjoy doing is talking a little bit, sharing some of the things we've learned about coffee to meet your specific desires/needs. Sounds a little weird to talk about meeting your desires, but it's kind of been a weird day, so we're just going to go with it today. So do those things. You can also reach out to us on Facebook if you want. We're there. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter at Stone Creek Coffee. So espresso, not espresso, before espresso, what we're drinking. We already drank this, not on the show, but on Friday. We start every week at Stone Creek Coffee with our Monday, like, round table for coffee. Christian will bring in two different coffees for us to taste and talk about as a team, as an operations team. And so I got the idea of like, well, if we're starting Monday with coffee, we should finish Friday with whiskey. So now we have a whiskey club, which is kind of fun. And this last Friday was my day, so I brought this particular product. And this is a bourbon that I picked up in Louisville, Kentucky, when I was down visiting a friend of mine. I went into a liquor store and wanted to find something that you couldn't necessarily get in Wisconsin. And there were plenty of like really exotic options, but I'm also cheap. So I wanted something that was unique but cheap. So there's Heaven Hill Distillery, which also does like Evan Williams and a lot of other stuff. They have the Heaven Hill label, and this is a six-year-old white label from Heaven Hill, 50% alcohol, so 100 proof. But
it looks like your typical bottom shelf whiskey. Like, if I'd seen that in a grocery store, I probably would not have picked it up.
Well, and it was on the bottom shelf.
Yeah, and when we did this tasting, Drew actually put it in a decanter and didn't let us see the bottle, which is kind of similar to how we do coffee. It's like you have to taste it blind, you have to judge it for what it is, and it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, well, I got it because we have a couple of bourbon. I'm more of a Scotch guy. You guys know that if you're a connoisseur of the podcast. But we have two bourbon connoisseurs here and many bourbon, not connoisseur, like a fanatic. But anyway, bourbon's kind of the drink of choice in general at Stone Creek amongst us office personnel. And so I called Aaron, one of the guys who's particularly well-versed. He's one of our wholesale account managers. And he said, you know, if you're looking to get something on a budget you can't get here, get that Heaven Hill stuff. So I did. It's like $12, which is ridiculous. And it's pretty solid stuff. So this is Heaven Hill bourbon.
As Drew mentioned, it's...
I slurped too hard.
100 proof, 50% there, 50 proof? 100
proof. 100 proof.
100 proof.
either way, don't slurp your bourbon. That's not normally how you drink it, but that's what we get in the habit of slurping when we taste. Tasting notes.
The nose really hits you right away. Like, it's really strong vanilla with a kind of harsh alcoholness to it. You can smell the alcohol straight up. It's not like a bullet, which is like candy.
Yeah. Yeah, it curls your nose hairs a little bit. But it's not like turpentine-y. It's just sort of harsh, as you said. Some like dried apricot in there. We always say vanilla. It's just like...
Well, vanilla makes sense with bourbon because you're actually pulling the vanilla out of the oak, the charred oak.
Mm-hmm.
Made me feel better when I used to always call vanilla out for bourbon.
What else?
This has a lot of like toffee vanilla flavors on it. There's a slight amount of... It kind of reminds me of an Irish whiskey. It's got a little bit of that. I can't really describe the flavor. It's not peat. Gamey is the right kind of word. Gamey. That's not the right word, but it's kind of wild flavored.
Gamey. When I think of gamey, I used to go dove hunting. So I'm from Texas originally, and in Texas you shoot birds. And dove are a unique... That is a unique meat to eat.
You've had dove meat before.
I have, yep.
What's that taste like?
Gamey.
So
there you have it.
Something I learned.
If you're in Lovell and you want to pick up a cheap bourbon that's pretty solid, get Heaven Hill. If you're looking to look classy, don't get Heaven Hill. And we're on to espresso. So the impetus of this topic was a podcast that I was listening to that was talking about coffee, like talking about coffee culture, but they weren't coffee people. So it's kind of interesting to listen in as they talked about coffee. And there were times I cringed and was like, ah, but they were talking about espresso going bad. Like you're not supposed to leave espresso out because it goes bad. That was one thing that stood out to me. And why that stood out to me was because I've heard Stone Creek baristas talk about espresso going bad. Like, you don't leave it out for more than a minute and then use it in a customer drink because it goes bad. And I was like, oh, well, we should talk about that because I think that's a perception a lot of people have based on their training and based on sort of actually their perception of what's happening with the espresso.
Should we just define what espresso is?
Sure. So let's start there.
So we put together a handful of classes for our baristas, but also for the public. So if you take a public class with us, you get to learn a little bit about what espresso is. By definition, espresso can only be made by an espresso machine because you need a certain amount of pressure, 9 bars, in order to brew a shot of espresso. According to the Specialty Coffee Association of America, actually it's 14 to 18 grams of coffee brewed somewhere between 20 and 30 seconds, 195 to 205 degrees Fahrenheit, yielding 50 to 70 milliliters of water. And it has to be... Sorry, I'm a level one barista. I should know this by heart.
Certified.
I know. I got to go back and get retested. I should have the viscosity of warm honey and has the thick, dark golden crown. That's what
so
it is.
So do they still go by that? So, I mean, the parameters are way different now.
So the definition of espresso is still the same, and I think we could even start into this conversation about things going wrong with, is that definition necessarily what we use as a coffee industry? Like,
right.
How many people are actually pulling 14-gram shots? No one.
Yeah, it's really hard to pull a nice, rich shot of espresso at 14 grams unless you're doing a single. Very few people in the specialty coffee world right now are pulling espresso at less than 18 grams. Most are doing in like the high 19s, 20. Sometimes you see as high as 22 grams of coffee. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen 25.
Well, they make those 22 gram baskets now, which you can easily get 25, 26 like drippy
really
shots
pushing.
That go 45 seconds.
But that's the thing too, is that sort of every variable that goes into espresso, which we've talked about before, the coffee, the time of extraction, water temperature, you know, the machine, the amount of pressure that's going into it, every one of those variables is getting played with a lot right now. So you have espresso machines like the Modbar and like the Strata, like the Slayer, that all are playing around with pressure profiling, like changing up the pressure at different times of your extraction, or even operating at a lower pressure level during your extraction or higher. Like, there's just sort of variability built in these machines to play with unique coffees. And then, you know, we talked about dough size, talked about extraction time. All of that is getting messed with a whole lot, which I think is cool, actually.
I would say the original definition probably came from, like, what a traditional shot was pulled in Italy. And as soon as you learn those definitions, you're like, okay, here's a good starting point. But I think we jumped out of that 18 gram pretty early, like 14 to 18 grams. I would wager most people at home, if you have an espresso machine, you can't really pull much at 14, 15. It's going to be really fast, really probably watery, sour, bitter, sour, watery. I would say most, as we're talking about, most places here probably have a minimum dose of 17, averaging probably 19 to 20 grams on a typical double espresso. But we're also using bigger baskets and bigger machines these days.
So let's give kind of our parameters for Green Bike. So we have a range that we dial in, get our Green Bike espresso set up at, so our baristas know kind of where...
They're coming for Drew, man. They're coming for you.
They are. It's the thing. I mugged a guy in an alley the other day. He looked at me wrong. We kind of have a range that we like to get Green Bike set up at, so we know exactly what it's going to taste like for the customer, and that would be...
We like to be somewhere around 19 grams, usually plus or minus half a gram dose in.
So that's coffee.
Coffee in. We'd like to target 28 to 30 seconds, ideally, and they will be around 38 grams out, which is espresso out. Mm-hmm. And we always do everything dose in, dose out. So it's about double the weight going in, going out.
And we also do it by weight. We don't do it by the whole milliliters thing, because certain coffees will generate crema at a different rate. And when you're pulling an espresso, like, it's really hard to tell how much coffee you actually have there. Every coffee is different in terms of how it sort of builds crema, which is mostly gas, which isn't going to weigh very much. So you're going to have a shot that's measuring 80 milliliters that weighs like 45 grams. It doesn't lend for consistency. Whereas if you weigh your shots... Your way your outs, you're going to get a far more consistent product.
And we'll tweak on a daily basis. We'll tweak up like half a gram. We'll tweak down half a gram with the goal of just having a consistent flavor profile. And I'd say a lot of our baristas are really good at being able to dial that in, being confident in hitting that flavor profile, which is the most important thing, because the customer needs consistency for that espresso product. There's nothing more frustrating than going into a cafe that you love and having an inconsistent experience, especially with something as simple as an espresso. And I'm saying that kind of...
Tongue-in-cheek.
It's not simple, but it is the most fundamental thing, which I judge cafes on. Like, if you have, if you serve me a bad espresso, I'm probably not going to come back. Or I'm going to judge you kind of harsh on it, because you should have that down if you have an espresso machine.
Right. Yeah, I was in Chicago last week, and I was in one shop and had a great espresso, and, I mean... Generally, the experience there was better, and then I was in another shop that actually got me my espresso a lot faster, so I was happy about that. The first shop, I waited like 10 minutes to get my espresso, and there was nobody else in the shop. I was the first one at the counter. But the second one, they served me a shot of espresso that was so bad, I didn't drink it. Like, I'm actually willing, as a coffee person, I'm willing to wait 10 minutes to get a good shot in the second place. And both of these were really reputable roasters, like, across the U.S., so I won't say who they were. But now let's get to that first myth I mentioned, and it really comes down to this thing of what happens to espresso after you pull it. So let's say we pull a shot of Green Bike. The myth goes, and it comes out of Starbucks, that if you let the shot sit for longer than X amount of time, sometimes it's a minute, sometimes it's 10 seconds before you put in the drink, then it dies. Like, that's what they say, is it quote-unquote dies. And, like... So if you just sort of approach this kind of philosophically and you start asking questions like, why does it die? Like, what happens when it dies? You're left with a lot of ambiguity. Like, if you're a barista in training, you just sort of accept it. And like, oh, yeah, the shot dies. Can't let it die. Don't let it die. But ask the questions critically. Like, so what does it mean that it dies? And I think one thing you could say is that the crema dies. And Christian, why don't you talk
about that? Yeah, so the crema dissipates. That is a fact. So the crema is kind of that emulsification of oils and a suspension of gases that creates that foam on top of the espresso. And it doesn't last forever. It's just like if you make whipped cream, it doesn't last forever. But it doesn't mean that the melted whipped cream doesn't taste delicious underneath it. That crema is super important when constructing drinks. Like, you need that crema to rise and mix to the surface so you can have a nice, solid brown layer to make your latte art in and to make really attractive drinks. The crema is a sign that a shot of espresso was well pulled. Mm. And as long as you have that crema on there to start with, say you're in that really busy cafe and you're sitting at a table for 5 minutes before you go up and get your espresso, it's not going to have much crema on anymore, but it doesn't mean that it wasn't well pulled or that it's gone bad. It just means that you should have got up and gotten your espresso a lot sooner. The chemical compound, I would argue, doesn't change that much. If you have the science behind it that the chemical structure does change, please send me the information. I'd love to look it over. But that would be like saying that coffee changes between 195 and to the point where you can actually drink it at 165. That just doesn't really follow.
Right. So if you leave espresso out on the counter, it's not like the shot itself is changing as it sits there. Of course, like, certain oils will sort of coagulate to a certain extent, and I think that's kind of what you see with the crema. Is there, it does dissipate, but there still is kind of a film that builds up on top of the shot of espresso, but it's still the same thing in essence. Where it would change is if you continued to reintroduce heat to the final brewed product. So if you actually had like espresso on a hot plate, then you're cooking it, that would actually cause those oils probably to break down more, cause proteins to get a little nasty on you.
I actually know of a handful of coffee shops who save their quote-unquote bad shots and use them for other purposes. They go
like their blended beverages.
They're blended beverages. Yeah. They take them, refrigerate them, and have them ready. And it, like, when I, back when I was a barista, I'd hear them, those shots are going bad. They're going bad. They're probably just fine.
Yeah. They're, I mean, if you wouldn't serve it to a customer in a latte or in a doppio, I would recommend you not serve it to them in a blended beverage. But if you put it in the refrigerator and put it in a blended beverage, it's going to taste the same as if you would have just put it in a blended beverage immediately. Like, that time isn't doing anything, or that refrigeration isn't doing anything the flash chilling and the blender wouldn't have done. So, just, like, get the science right. I mean, figure out, like, if you're going to say that espresso changes or dies, actually measure it. You know, like, tell us what. And nobody has done that.
Also, why does Starbucks have pre-canned double shots available?
Right. And then they tell you that shots die. So to the point is, I think the motive for Starbucks was kind of good. Like, they saw it changing, and I don't think they really knew the difference. So also, it helps them to say that it dies and get the barista to be really intentional about using it so that they're actually faster. Like, it does promote for speed. Like, don't let your shots sit. You should be steaming your milk as you're pulling the shot, so that as soon as that shot's done, you can pour your drink, customer gets it, and then they go on with their day. So shots don't die. It's not a thing. One myth closely tied to this about espresso is that if you leave it out, the shot gets bitter and sour. And I'd say shots don't get bitter and sour. You taste them as a bitter and sour shot better the longer the espresso sits out. And it actually involves the taste perception at different temperatures that your tongue naturally has, and not the espresso itself.
We go and we cup coffees. We don't cup them just at one temperature. We cup them multiple times because your flavor receptors on your tongue, your taste buds, actually respond differently to different flavor compounds at different temperatures. So we'll go through, we'll cup it about 150, 160, and then again at like 130, 140, and again around 120 degrees. And as a coffee cools down, you'll notice different flavor notes. What you probably would notice in a shot that turned bitter or a shot that turned sour is that initial experience was not bitter or sour because it was too hot for your flavor receptors to actually experience it the way that it actually was. That's why when many of you go and get your gas station coffee, your first sip is like, oh, it's really hot. I guess it tastes okay. And then you let it sit for 5 minutes. You're like, God, this is awful. This is really bad. Gas stations, please make your coffee better.
Anyway.
But yeah, flavor. It's all about flavor perception.
Uh-huh.
And if a shot tastes bad at the end, it probably tastes bad at the beginning.
Right. And so if you are a particular fan of, like, espresso right out of the machine because you go to your shop and you say it's better right out of the machine when it's hot, that's probably because you're not getting great quality espresso. I like to let mine sit for a few minutes. I stir it up to get the crema actually incorporated in the shot, because crema by itself actually tastes a little eh, even in a good shot of espresso, because of the gases actually, not the espresso itself. So I stir it up, and then I let it sit there for a while so it can kind of cool, and I get a lot of the fruity sweetness, the acidity that's there that I would actually miss if I just slammed it when it was hot. So in that sense, an espresso will be more sour, quote-unquote, the more you leave it out, because you're actually able to perceive the acidity more. It shouldn't be like sour like a lemon most of the time. It should have some sweetness to it. Should be like red fruit. It's always going to be intense because it's espresso. When I say red fruit, I mean like strawberries, raspberries. What else would be red? Pomegranate. But it's always going to be more intense because it's espresso. But that's part of the name of the game, you know. So sip it slowly, aerate it, like literally slurp it, and just take it slow and let it evolve as the temperature changes. You'll find it more of an experience if you're getting good espresso from a good roaster with a good barista versus just something to give you a caffeine jolt, or versus just something in your latte.
That leads us into another myth. Espresso does not necessarily have more caffeine in it than other coffee beverages.
Which I think we've talked about before, but we'll reiterate.
It's important, and we get this a lot when we're talking to people just about coffee, because they're always concerned about like how much caffeine they're consuming. So when we have espresso coffee, like the whole bean, and then like a drip coffee, whole bean, it's the same bean. It's the same mm-hmm. bean going to the same thing, like the same espresso roast, whatever. It's just that you're drinking 2 ounces of a very concentrated liquid. I last measured our TDS, total dissolved solids, the amount of coffee floating around in the water, to be about 8 or 9% on our espresso, so it's a pretty heavy brew, versus a normal brewed coffee, which is about 2%. It's not 2%, it's like 1.5, mm-hmm. 1.4, 1.5. We like our coffee on the stronger side. So if you drink that really concentrated thing really fast, you're going to get a buzz faster, but it doesn't necessarily have more caffeine in it. It's the same amount of caffeine, it's just diluted further, so you get the same amount of caffeine in an 8-ounce cup of coffee that you do in a 2-ounce espresso,
give or take. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, and I'll just reiterate too, so you kind of had two myths there. One is that the beverage is, like, to drink a double shot of espresso is more caffeine than an 8-ounce coffee. But you also mentioned one about the beans themselves, is people will buy beans that they think are going to yield to a stronger cup of coffee if, like, on the package of beans it says espresso. But you can literally pull any coffee out there as an espresso, because the coffee itself is not like part of the definition of what an espresso is. An espresso is a certain size beverage pulled in a certain amount of time on an espresso machine with coffee. And so people just put espresso on a bag as a sort of a marketing term, or to say, hey, this is how we use it. Because that's what we do with Green Bike and with Bone Shaker, is like, those are coffees that we think work really well as espressos. Green Bike being our like everyday, great in a latte, great by itself, espresso, and then Bone Shaker being a lighter roasted, higher acidity, higher like fruitiness, kind of specialty espresso. But that's just what we think. Like, I know we pulled Black Sheep, one of our blends, as an espresso. It's really, really solid as an espresso. And then you can pull any light roast single origin, and you'd find every single coffee to be really, really different, but probably each a great espresso in its own right. Any other myths?
Yeah, I have a couple.
Cool.
So there is a myth out there, and I was in this camp for a long time, that super automatic machines can't pull a good shot of espresso.
So that's a machine where you just hit the button and it does all the work for you. It grinds the coffee,
yeah,
disperses the coffee, brews the coffee.
Exactly. So it's kind of set it, forget it. You set the parameters in, and you press the button and it makes a shot of espresso for you. And I'm willing to argue in front of the coffee world that you can actually get really good shots of espresso off of a super automatic machine. That's not unconditional. You have to have someone who knows how to go pull a good shot of espresso, program it, and you have to keep up with the maintenance of the machine and make sure it stays really well fine-tuned.
Clean, good water, good coffee.
The parameters aren't getting junked up and that, yeah, the machine isn't getting full scale. And if you program it to be repeatable, it's very possible that you will get a really good shot of espresso every single time because the machine's following the exact parameters that we're setting out. Dose size might be actually a little smaller. We're experimenting with a super automatic machine, and we had reasonably good shots, like to the point of where I enjoyed drinking them on a consistent basis. Like everything I was putting out was really nice. And I've actually had some super automatic shots when I've been traveling at airports. I've been really surprised at like how good they can be. But I've also been surprised by how bad they can be.
Yeah.
And my reflection is not on the barista making it or the machine itself. It's on like, dude, your company needs to spend more energy making this better because you're putting the energy away from training the barista into having this really expensive piece of equipment. And it needs to be good.
Yeah.
It really needs to be good.
Interesting thing. Matt Perger did, who's pretty well known in sort of the coffee blog world. He also wears really tight pants. He did a presentation a while back on sort of like the future of, you know, the coffee company or the cafe being a super automatic machine. Like, that's how industries go. Like, they go away from like really intense, expensive manual labor to automation, and it's only a matter of time before a company really develops a super automatic machine that makes some dope espresso every time, like that can dial itself in. Like, that's just a matter of time. There will be those of us who are always into the craft manual side of it. It's really poetic. It's really great. But then there will be companies that crop up that can do what we do in terms of quality without all the labor and overhead. And that's, it's, crap's going to get real. So just don't stick your head in the sand and think that's not a thing.
Then on the flip side of this argument, there's also a myth that says you need a really fancy, really expensive, you need a Slayer or the best machines, or you need a Strata in order to make the best shots of espresso. And
which is, I'd say that's pretty popular right now. Like, anybody who's sort of got a big name as a coffee company when they open a new shop, I'm too close to the mic, sorry, I was pouring water. But when they open a new shop, they're investing a butt ton of money into their espresso machines, and you see Slayer, which is a pretty cool machine, be really popular in this sort of new cafe movement.
And we'll just note that we're not bashing any machine.
Right, we're not poo-pooing on them. They're very cool.
They're awesome machines. But what we're saying is the myth is that you need to have one of these in order to have the best espresso. And I would argue that you can pull a shot just as good or better on a plain semi-automatic Linea that you can on a really, really good, like, expensive Slayer, something that you have to adjust the variables on a regular basis. And I heard someone, I'm annoyed because I was talking with someone recently about this, and I'm like, yeah, it's really not worth it to go into a cafe where they're running on a Slayer or a Strata where you have to go and manually pull the shots and have, like, one out of every six shots be consistent. Like, if the barista doesn't know what they're doing or doesn't care, that's a bad shot versus a Linea, which is a little more analog, but a little more systemized. So you have just a simple on-off function, and you can get a reasonably good or really good espresso time after time. There's a reason why the Linea has kind of been like the workhorse benchmark of the espresso world. It's because it creates such a consistent product.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of products out there right now. Modbar, I went through them earlier, that allow you to mess with the variables of your espresso. But people need their coffee. Like, when they come into your shop, they don't want to wait. Like, I didn't want to wait when I went to Chicago on Friday 10 minutes for an espresso. Like, we had places to be. So, and most consumers don't want to wait that long. So in what world are you actually going to take the time to use all those variables to pull, like, the immaculate God shot of espresso, when most of the time we just need to pull a good, consistent shot of espresso? And I think at the end of the day, it doesn't come down to all the bells and whistles. It comes down to consistency and the skill of the barista. Like, because I've had amazing shots at Stone Creek from our baristas, you know, just as good as anywhere else. And we run really well-built La Marzocco lineas, which, as Christian said, is kind of the, you know, the workhorse standard. It's not super sexy until we customize it, but it certainly does a job. Rant over.
So there's another kind of myth, I would say, that's especially true for at-home espresso machines. Like, what's the most important thing to make good espresso at home? Is it the coffee that you buy? Is it the machine that you have? Is it the grinder? Is it the person making it? And I have long argued that's actually the person in the training. That's the most important thing. Because you can have a really good trained barista or someone who knows how to use an at-home machine really well. You can kind of have mediocre coffee. You can have a mediocre machine. And you can have a mediocre grinder. And you can make some pretty good coffee products with it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus you can have a brand new barista or someone off the street trying to pull on a Strada and just have terrible, terrible experiences.
I would agree that it comes down to the person. I think that's the most important thing, your knowledge level. You can go and listen to our entire episode on pulling espresso at home where we walk through each of the variables you encounter. If you really want to get great products, it is important to do some investment into your bar, into your grinder in particular. But if you don't know what you're doing, then that stuff does not help you. So we'll go back, before we wrap the episode, to the final espresso beverage itself, just so you understand sort of what it is. Christian mentioned that it is about 8 to 9% coffee, like dissolved coffee, and then the rest is, well, you know, water, like coffee tends to be. So water is a big player in this. But when you get a good shot of espresso, we talked about crema, and that it is the sort of the fatty compounds in coffee, its oils, and its gas. So crema, where it looks really good, like the myth here, the perception can be that sort of the crema is the best that espresso has to offer, when in actuality it's not. Like, it actually is kind of yucky tasting. So that spoon that you get when you get a shot of espresso from a great specialty roaster is not so you taste the crema, it's so that you stir it in. Like, so that you get that espresso kind of all on the same page. Then you can sip it. You're going to get a far better experience than that first sip where you suck all the crema off the top of the espresso. And then you're left doing the twist and shout as you try and process what tends to be a pretty bitter experience.
Yeah. There's a reason why in the World Barista Competition they have judges stir 3 times before sipping. It's to get that full incorporation of flavor all the way through. Just like when you have anything in your refrigerator, it kind of settles, it separates. You want to stir it so you have an even, like, even suspension of flavor molecules throughout. Yeah.
And then the rest of your espresso is really just coffee. I mean, that's really it. Like, there's nothing crazy weird that happens in the pulling of an espresso. The pressure just allows for the dissolving of more. It's just more coffee. You know, and certainly with that pressure, you get a few extra sort of flavor molecules that would be otherwise insoluble in your drip coffee. But you could technically replicate espresso, making espresso without, like, a machine, if you can get an extraction that takes place at 9 bars of pressure at the right temperature with the right grind size of coffee. And that's sort of the premise behind a manually powered espresso machine, which is how it started, is you fill a chamber with water and then a chamber below that with coffee, and then you force the water through the coffee chamber with, like, arm pressure that would measure 9 bars, which 9 bars, how would you equate 9 bars in terms of pounds of pressure? Because we're dumb and we don't
use a lot. So if you've ever used an AeroPress, and for analogy, an AeroPress is about 1 bar of pressure.
And you gotta push that sucker.
You really do. So 9 bars of pressure would be about pushing 130 pounds per square inch.
Dang.
Which
that's
is
a lot.
It's a lot. it's not easy.
Nope. So if you have any other myths about espresso or perceptions you have or questions, don't hesitate to email us. So we come out every 2 weeks on Monday. You can get us on iTunes or on our website. I assume you're listening because you found us at one of those places. Keeping it perpetually fresh and sustainable. We are geeks.
And we are talking coffee.